Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and
hello.
Welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. This is another in our continuing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down and talk with a mover and shaker in the entertainment world. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This week, I get to double the fun and welcome not one guest, but two guests. They are the band Days Between Stations, a band firmly rooted in the prog movement, and they'll be joining me from the West Coast. I'm going to have Sepand Samzadin and Oscar Fuentes on the line.
Hello.
But, before I introduce our guests, though, let's have a little taste of Days Between Stations. This track comes from their self-titled debut album, and this is How to Seduce a Ghost. Thank you. Oscar and Sepand, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Maybe we can start with a little biographical information. Sepand, tell us a little about yourself. I understand you're a Iranian-Canadian.
And Spaniard, and I became an American citizen about 3 weeks ago. Like a little international.
A little bit of everything.
Exactly. Fortunate. No, I was born in Iran in 1975, and because of the revolution and all the political turmoil, we left, and we left for Spain in 1981. And I lived in Marbella, which is very, very close to Gibraltar, until about 1986, and I got a lot of flavor of the Spanish folk music and a lot of pop. And in fact, Queen came to our town once, and that was the first time I ever heard a concert in my life. So you know, I had a lot of that sort of the pop influences, a lot of the Spanish folk influences in me. And in 1986, we left Spain for Canada. And we were there. We went from whatever reason, beautiful weather, Mediterranean weather, into freezing cold. And we were there till from 1986 to 2001. I lived in Canada, and I got exposed to a lot of rock music, a lot of electronic music over there.
I actually lived in Alberta, Canada, up until about 2 months ago. I was really glad to get away from the weather.
Yeah, yeah. It's like putting a steak in a freezer. You look younger, but you know it's very cold.
What part of Canada were you in?
In Toronto.
Ah.
Yeah, and I never moved around, so yeah, we were in Toronto for a while, and they're really it's a very great city, very cultured. You know, and the people are relatively friendly compared to other cities, and it's very diverse. I like that very much. And people live in peace. And they're, as far as the youngsters, you know, there's the electronic scene, which is pretty heavy, there's also the rock scene. So they still have, you know, they're more into the rock than the kind of Blink 182 type of thing. About 2001, I moved from Toronto to Los Angeles. I got into a graduate program, college, and I got a great job opportunity, and so I moved, and I've been here since.
Good for you. Oscar, what's your story? I don't believe you're Iranian.
No. Actually, originally, I'm from Mexico City. I was born in Mexico City. To a Mexican father and an American mother, born and raised there till I was 15 years old, and then we moved to Orange County, California, when I was 15. I finished high school here and college, and when I started college, I started playing in bands in the area as well, and which is in the, I don't want to date myself, you probably need Carbon 14, but in the late 80s, I've been playing since in some bands that have, you know, gained some renown locally, and they always seem to sort of break apart. Ancestrally, I guess, on my dad's side, I'm French and Spanish, and on my mom's side, I'm Irish and German, so I think we've almost covered everything in this band.
Oh, I would say so. I mean, it sounds like you pretty much cover the planet there.
Yeah.
So how did Days Between Stations become a band?
Well, in 2003, roughly, I had my last project had kind of fallen apart. I was in a band called The Women. That we'd made sort of a minor splash here in the West Coast, and gotten to play shows with bands like Sloan and The Damned, for example. And then when that fell apart, I was more or less ready to throw in the towel. Because with when a band breaks up, it seems you're back at square zero, more or less. You know, you have to sort of start from scratch. It's not like being in a company or something. You can move to a relatively the same position somewhere. You know, you kind of have to start from scratch.
Right.
And I decided to start studying more composition. And then I was just looking through a local music magazine called Music Connection, and I saw an ad that Sepan had placed, and he was looking for musicians to collaborate with on a concept album. I thought, concept album? It seems to be right up my alley. And so I responded to Sepan's ad, and we actually met up at the Cat and Fiddle on that Hollywood Boulevard.
It's one of the only few pubs here.
Yeah, and it sounded like a pub.
It's not a pub culture at all over here, so it's very nice to have a place like that.
Actually, I noticed while reading the CD credits that you both are credited with playing synths and guitars. Is there predominantly one of you that plays one instrument and the other predominantly plays the other instrument? Or you kind of toss it around and share?
It's we typically there's a predominant player. I predominantly play guitar, and Oscar plays keyboards. And to be truthful, I'm more of a chicken keyboard player, meaning that I can only use one finger at a time. And if it's anything I do, it's usually programmed in, so it's not by any means a skill or anything. But, you know, I would do the panning. But I mostly play guitars.
Come on, I can use three fingers at least.
Thank you. I think you were cross-eyed then, but all right, thank you.
One-fingered player, that sounds like me on the keyboard. The computer keyboard, that is. Many prog bands seem to have their musical roots in some form of formal musical training. I don't know how many prog bands I've interviewed, and I'd say like 80% of them, that there is a member that went to college to learn music. Is that the case for you two?
It is the case, actually. I started piano lessons when I was 13 in Mexico City, so I had those for a couple of years. And when I was 18 and went to college here, that was originally my major, so I studied music kind of formally for a couple of years, and then switched my major to literature. So I actually never finished the music degree, but I did study some in college.
And I did take formal classes back in the heyday of the hair metal bands. I have to admit that I'm not by any means, before the album, of course, was linked to prog at all. So I have more of a electronic punk rock or a hard rock background. But I did have formal training, and admittedly, when Kurt Cobain came on the scene and I felt I didn't have to worry about solos or anything anymore and just play, that's exactly what I did. I dropped everything. And towards the end of college, so I was mostly focused on experimental and just playing for fun. I didn't really have any bands. I had a couple of punk rock bands here and there, but after college, I began to take courses again and get some formal training.
Punk rock, that sounds very, very different from the material that you're producing with Days Between Stations.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
On that subject, who are the major musical influences on you, and Who do you like to listen to? You know, when you're not listening to Days Between Stations.
My influences are mostly the biggest one is Nirvana. Then the following would be Depeche Mode. I listen to a lot of Radiohead, and they seem to get better each time. And the closest I came to prog would be Queen. I'm a big Doors fan, Melvin, Sonic Youth. And I'm into some of the classical composers, Beethoven being a huge one, a big fan of Vivaldi, and some of the modern composers like Gorecki and Avril Part, John Adams, Philip Glass, Steve Reich, and that's what I've been listening to. And I used to really make fun of Oscar, and I hate to admit this, but I did. I kind of made a lot of Dungeons and Dragons jokes and a lot of these sort of stuff. And, of course, it was my naivete, and I didn't really understand what prog was about. And once we did the album and people were saying it was prog because I was very fixed on saying that it's art rock, I began to listen to all the reviewers making comparisons to Floyd and to early Genesis and Porcupine Tree. And when I started listening to these bands, I was just completely floored because I was just, you know, it's just amazing. So I'm big fans of them now, and I'm really influenced by them. So I'm wondering how the new material is going to sound with this influence.
You know, it's curious. I did read a couple of reviews by other people, just to see how far off base I was with my review. I honestly don't see a huge resemblance to Floyd. Maybe a couple of tracks from The Piper at the Gates of Dawn, maybe even a track or two of Umagama. I see you more following the lines of someone like Tangerine Dream.
And that's mostly, yeah, Oscar's influences.
Yeah, I think
no,
right.
Oscar's to blame.
No, it's great. I love them now. I actually was listening to them all day yesterday. So they're great.
I think you're right. You know, because definitely there's the prog influence on my side particularly. I grew up listening to, you know, old Genesis. Marillion's a big one. Definitely. You know, Pink Floyd, yes, and also listen to a lot of contemporary classical, including some of the minimalists, you know, like Steve Reich and John Adams and Philip Glass, and like you mentioned, you know, some of the early krautrock, like Tangerine Dream and Klaus Schulze, and that's definitely an influence, and, you know, the Pink Floyd, particularly for the track Either Or, I think the comparison comes, and, you know, it was definitely an influence, but I don't think I agree with you. I don't think it's our predominating influence.
Right.
Yeah.
Prog compositions can become very involved and complex. They making them basically studio pieces rather than live gig material. Do you have a problem transitioning between the two worlds? And do you have preference? Do you like studio, or do you prefer the the live environment?
Well, you know, actually, to this day, we haven't really had a proper gig. And, yeah. So we are transitioning to the live stage. Particularly when we're done with the next project. And it's a challenge, you know, because the first album we approached it more as almost an art project, just a compositional project. We weren't really thinking of performance at the time. And so I like to say that to play everything the way it is on the album, I'd have to grow a few more arms. And so it would be a challenge, but of course, with certain bands nowadays, like Peter Gabriel and even Porcupine Tree, I've seen laptops on the stage. You know, I don't want to go into it. Is it live or is it Memorex terrain? You know, we don't want to cheat because we do play. But I think there is a way that we can adapt the material to the stage. We hope to.
And I think, you know, I think it's important for me to mention that this wasn't anything that was supposed to be released. I think Oscar and I were just, when we first met, we were initially very, very disappointed by what we were hearing. You know, we felt, you know, bankrupt. It's in a way that we weren't enjoying music anymore. And we, you know, we could sit and listen to music for hours and hours on end. We're big fans. So it was more to, I think, to fill some sort of inner void in us. And when we were playing, we were just coming up with ideas. And most of the ideas were live. For example, if we take Requiem for the Living, Oscar had two pieces that were just separate, and I had this idea, Gorecki being a composer that I'm a big fan of, kind of putting this piece together. So what we would do is play live, meaning that, you know, instead of sitting there with a pen and pencil or with paper, we try to figure out what we wanted to say, just kind of act as a medium and just let whatever comes out to come out and not worry about making anything mathematical. But you run into this problem eventually where you want to take the song somewhere or you want to make it more exciting or add some sort of dimension to it. And that's when we would get together and we would just, in a sort of methodical, mathematical way, try to figure out what we could do to link things. And if the idea worked, it worked. If it didn't, then we would let it incubate for a while. And that's another reason why the album took a while, is especially the last track, Laudanum, it really did take 4 years. And it had to incubate until we could come back to face the song again and to either play it out live or to... from a theoretical perspective, try to churn it out.
Okay. Let's take another musical break. Again, from their debut album, this is Days Between Stations and a track titled Radio Song. great stuff. Now, I think that song reflects what you were talking about earlier as to your musical influences. I can certainly hear aspects of the bands that you were talking about. I recently interviewed Oliver Wakeman. That would be Rick Wakeman's son. He's a prog rocker following in his dad's footsteps, operating out of England. And I asked him if it was just my imagination, or is prog rock making a resurgence? His reply was, and I can't remember his exact words, but it was something like, prog is what it is. It's a minority sport, always has been, and always will be. What are your thoughts? Is it gaining ground at the moment?
Well, that's interesting, because, I think it is sort of a minority sport in a way. However, there's, obviously in the 70s, a lot of the prog bands and early 80s sort of got to be arena bands like Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Yes and Genesis and so on. But as far as a resurgence, I did notice maybe in the mid-90s a resurgence of I guess, third wave prog is what they call it, with bands like the Flower Kings and Fox Beard and so on, making a sort of a new entry into the sort of stylistic prog arena. And then, of course, there's certain bands that are prog influenced that are more mainstream, I suppose, like Radiohead, Mars Volta is one. I'm not sure if the majority of their audience is even aware that you know, say Mars Volta is, to me, heavily influenced by Yes, or you know, they hear the old Genesis and Pink Floyd that I hear in, for example, OK Computer. But I think it's interesting because I think prog influenced bands sort of enter the mainstream a lot. Well, not a lot, but certain bands. I think
they drift in and out.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah,
there'll be,
true.
Yeah, there'll be one song that is suddenly a crossover.
That's right. Yeah.
See, to me, being new in the prog world, it's definitely very imaginative. It's very creative. It has art. It has soul. It has weight. It has so many dimensions to it. And in order for it to be allowed to the mainstream, I think the listener has to be able to understand these things or at least tolerate it. But it's kind of a haircut society right now, and we can definitely hear on mainstream radio, and I'm talking mainstream radios alone here, the songs just don't have that. I mean, there's a few bands like Radiohead, like you said, there are crossovers, but generally you'd have to ask the mass to be able to listen to the music and appreciate it. Otherwise, it's not going to be played. So I think it's going to be a complete culture change in order to have prog music, you know, the type of people who would listen to the music, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. And I just don't see it happening yet.
No. You're talking about people like me.
Well, a lot of people buying our albums, you know, we see, on the fan club or, you know, when they sign up, we see that they're either in their early 20s or they're in their 40s. So a few in the 30s. But, I don't know.
The rumor mill, as in my very good friend Billy at Glass Onion, tells me that there is a new CD in the making. What can you tell us about this project, and when might we see it?
That's a very good question.
We are working on new tracks. The tracks are very, so far they're very different than the one you hear on the album. I believe what we're going to do, and I don't think Oscar and I have a firm conclusion yet, but we're going to be releasing an EP, and we might include a song from the first album.
Sort of reworked.
Sort of reworked, and you know the way we wanted it. Unfortunately, you know we do appreciate a lot more live and real instruments versus synthesizers. So sometimes this, because of money, we won't be able to afford real musicians. We have to compensate with synthesizers. So we might do that, but we are also working on another full-length album. So we probably would expect that, I would say, in 2010.
2010?
The EP is going to be 2009, and then 2010, yeah, for the full-length album.
Oh, wow.
We're getting a lot of pressure, though.
We're going to break ranks and be optimistic and say maybe 2009.
Oh, good.
The music business has changed a great deal over the years. One of the most significant changes, certainly in the past 5 years, is the internet. It's leveled the playing field a great deal. Streaming audio, play before you pay. Clearly, this can do nothing but good for the smaller bands. How important do you see this new media?
I think it's been hugely important to a huge benefit to bands that, particularly like us, that are doing making music that's not necessarily going to be radio friendly. As an aside, radio song, we kind of titled that tongue in cheek because that was the sort of odd boy out of the batch of songs that we have there. But I think it's been a great boost to be able to sort of reach directly across the aisle and into the person's lap, so to speak, and sort of bypass the middlemen being, you know, the record companies sort of waving their magic wand saying, yes, this is fit for consumption or this isn't. And I think, you know, of course, by leveling the playing field, it also means that the playing field can be flooded with stuff that might maybe not quite ready for prime time, but I think overall it's a great thing.
I think to add on to what Oscar's saying, it really helped us. I mean, we put it on MySpace, then one person thought, oh, I know a reviewer, we'll send it to a reviewer, and then it just completely blew out of proportion. And we really owe that to the internet. At the same time, like Oscar said, it's so flooded that it's so hard to fight to hear your own voice, because now you have an army of musicians, each with a purpose, each with wanting to prove themselves musically, and there's only so many ears. And you know, the marketing becomes very tough, and it's competition. It's survival of the fittest, and that's what it really is. So, you know, there's a lot more ingrown fighting, too, to be heard.
Where can people find you online?
We are on MySpace. So it's MySpace, Days Between Stations Band, and then www.daysbetweenstations.com. And if they type in Days Between Stations in Google, we'll come up. So we're easy to find. Facebook too. Yeah, Facebook and Last.fm. Sorry, I forgot.
Oh my word! You're everywhere.
We're everywhere so far. just not Walmart and Best Buy, like unfortunately AC/DC and Axl Rose. But we'll stay away from that.
Just out of curiosity. I'm a big fan of synthesizers. What do you guys use? And I know that you have more than one. What's your favorite?
Well, I have a Kurzweil PC2X. That is sort of my main sort of keyboard for the whole piano and sort of Hammond organ sort of arsenal. And then I have a Roland JP8000. I think that's one of my favorites for sure, as far as particularly playing lead sounds and actually just experimenting with more electronic sounds. Very good, like real-time control. And also I have a Korg Triton Extreme that I actually got from Sapan. And then Sapan's got his own little arsenal of keyboards that he can tell you about.
Sure, I have the Nord Lead Rack 3. It's a module. I have the Virus C, which is very nice. It's got this kind of very harsh, aggressive, a lot of electronic sounds. We really enjoy that. And the Moog, that's my baby. And I'm sure, I can hear your mouth watering.
Yes.
So we, what else do we have?
The Korg MS.
That's right, the Korg. And I just recently purchased the... Yeah, for the vocoder. That's so actually what you hear on Radio Song was the vocoder through the Korg. And I just recently purchased a Kurzweil PC1X.
Don't forget the French Connection.
Oh, I can't believe I forgot that. Being a big Radiohead fan, I was watching some Saturday night skits that they were on, and they were playing some shows, and I just saw this weird instrument, so I looked into it, and it turns out that they're manufacturing it in the UK, and I went and bought one. And you can
called the Ondes Martinot.
Ondes Martinot, that's right, that's right. And I think if I pronounce his name correctly, help me out, Oscar, is Messiaen, is it? French composer?
Messiaen,
sorry. He uses that quite a bit, and I know that that was the influence for Radiohead. So we use a lot of that, and you can hear the French Connection in either or in the background. So I generally like the mono harsh tones. So those are the synths I carry.
I had the opportunity to talk with Keith Emerson.
Wow.
Yes. And you might find this hard to believe, but it is absolutely true. He still has his modular Moog from, I think he purchased it in 1970 or 71.
Wow.
And it is still working, and it's installed in a studio in Los Angeles where he lives, and he still uses it.
That's amazing. Yeah, they're great instruments. I think the major difference between the two, I mean, besides MIDI and all that, is the tuning was. I can understand how frustrating that could be because back in the day you had to tune.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh yeah. In fact, Keith has a full-time technician whose only job in life is to keep that modular Moog running.
That's great. But
where do I apply?
Well, you can come over, Oscar, if you want.
Yeah.
Just tune this Moog.
In fact, on the subject of Moogs, I saw a press release recently, which definitely caught my eye. And I know that both of you play synthesizers and guitars. Have you heard about the Moog guitar?
I am absolutely shocked about that. That is, obviously the first time I'm hearing this is from you, so I've got to do some research on that. That's something I'd love to own. Wow.
You're going to be rushing out to buy one.
Exactly. I haven't gotten my own Christmas gift yet, so maybe I'll do that.
Okay, we're getting pretty close to the end here.
Sure.
But I do want to pose a trick question to you, and this is absolute trick. I do hope I've selected the right track. I just want to play the first 20 seconds, and seeing as your synthesizer users, abusers, and experts, can you name this instrument? God, I hope I got the right track. Okay.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I own one too. I think it's a theremin.
It is indeed.
I can't believe you forgot to mention that one too.
Yeah, I did. I totally forgot it. Yeah. No, yeah.
Okay. But believe it or not, that little segment came from a punk band.
Is it a Fishbone?
Even punk bands occasionally use theremins.
Wow. I thought it was The Ventures or someone like that, or a screwed up Beach Boys song somewhere. Wow.
Well, actually, let me see if I can tell you the band's name. I know the track is called Rise of the Deceased. Oh, it's Los Defuntos.
Yeah, I've heard of them. I haven't listened to them before. I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're out of the L.A. area as well.
That's a lot of theremins over here.
So you do actually have a theremin?
Yeah. I'm trying to learn to work with it because it's, seems to be an angry person. You get too close to it, it screams, and then you move away, then it's soft. So it's a very, it's an art.
Yes, that is certainly what I've been told. Gentlemen, this has been a delightful conversation, but alas, I am going to have to call an end to it. I want to thank you both for taking time out to talk with us. It certainly has been a great, great interview, and I'm sure I join all of my listeners and readers in wishing you the very, very best in 2009 and many, many years to come.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate all the time and effort you put into to us and the questions and hearing the music. We really, really appreciate it. And we're fans of yours, too, so we'll be listening to you.
I will certainly be putting up a story on Blogger News. That's www.bloggernews.net. And it will have a link to this wonderful audio adventure. So it's good night from you guys, and it's good night from me. Have
good night.
A wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Oh, man?
Yeah.
Yeah.